Okay, and here we are, hour number two, and we're going to talk to Reverend Ted Pike this hour about something that's going on in this country's biggest city, well, most populous, I guess, geographically not that big, not like L.A., New York City, and it's the ultra-Orthodox Jewish Hasidic community. There is a lot of power there. I don't even have to tell most of you that. But apparently, in certain areas of the city where this group holds up, the police don't even like to go. There's a lot of alleged crime, a lot of alleged illegal activity, and Ted Pike has a three-part series up on truthtellers.org and also at rents.com, which explains a lot of this. It's something that is completely off the radar as far as the MSM goes, for obvious reasons. You know the game. Ted, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
What's going on with these people? Who are they, and why don't we know about them?
Well, I have been very concerned over this incredible power and corruption of this very large New York City Jewish Hasidic community. I suppose it numbers around 200,000. But you are right. A large section of the city, such as Brooklyn's Crown Heights, are now virtually self-governing Jewish zones in which Jewish police and councils of rabbis rule. And the policy of the New York Police Department up until recently, and I believe right now, is that the police are not to interfere or try to go into basically hostile territory, because there are what are called shamarim Hasidic police patrols that are sometimes quite uncooperative.
They're so these are like community police. The regular cops don't go there.
That's right. The Jews of these communities have insisted that they have to have their own rights to police and to govern these areas, because
really their own laws, their own rules. That
oh, absolutely.
How interesting.
And they want transgression, even violent crime, arbitrated by Jewish councils. And in fact, Dov Hyken, who is the assemblyman in Albany for Brooklyn, several years ago, he boldly said that he knew of hundreds of children who had been molested by Jewish pedophiles, but he said because they had the names were given to him in confidentiality, he was not going to even report those to the government, to the authorities. And of course, that's obstruction of justice. He was saying he was going to submit those names for consideration to rabbinic councils, and if they did nothing, then he might give them to the government. But that was, I think, it was 5 years ago, and I don't believe he ever has. And can you imagine what if an archbishop was found to be hiding the fact that a priest, a pedophile priest, had seduced an altar boy? But he would not. He was very adamant that he would not give that name to the government. He'd have the entire Jewish media descending upon him. He'd have the police. They would make an international scene about it in the New York Times. But here we have blatant violation of the laws that are going on. And I'll talk about all the categories of crime that the Hasidim are involved in which the police are now so thoroughly intimidated that we literally have the equivalent of what they had in Europe in the shtetls or the Warsaw Ghetto, where the Jews have their own enclaves not only in New York City, but in New York State and Baltimore, governed by these police, and I'm afraid it's going to be radiating out to major metropolitan areas like Los Angeles, Chicago, Miami in the years ahead.
Okay, you're talking almost about some kind of a gang network that's spreading out over the country.
It's hard to deny that Hasidic Judaism, both in America, in New York, and in Israel on the West Bank, with their equivalent, the Haredi settlers, the violent settlers, is organized crime. It's an ongoing organized crime organization. I'm especially upset because just this month, a black homosexual student without provocation, was set upon by more than a dozen of these Shamrim police in Brooklyn.
Yes.
And they chased him. They ran him to the ground. They dragged him between cars. They beat him violently, smashing his eye socket and tearing his retina. He's had two surgeries, another surgery coming, and the police are not going to intervene, or they are not intervening as of now. This is a blatant, bias-motivated hate crime if there ever was one.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet you don't hear Eric Holder saying we need to go into Brooklyn and have justice for this homosexual black student, another top priority protected group. Why? Because the Jews have special, extra special protection under both New York State and federal hate crimes laws.
Well, do they ever? We've talked about that for a long time. This particular Hasidic group, though, tell our listeners what Hasidic means and how they would differ from normal, run-of-the-mill, Orthodox, church-going, synagogue-going religious folks. What's the difference?
Well,
what's the deal about Hasidic Jews?
I'm a believer in the thesis by Arthur Kessler, a Jewish novelist.
I found no one that I have more respect for. That guy was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. He wrote a book called The 13th Tribe, in which he unleashed a really revolutionary thesis, and that was that in the middle of the 8th century A.D., the king or the Kagan of Khazaria, which was a large nation between the Black and the Caspian Seas in the Caucasus area of Eurasia, Central Europe, converted to Judaism, and in the process of the next century or two, the inhabitants entirely became convinced that they were not descendants of Attila the Hun or Turks, but were actually children of Abraham, the lost 10 tribes, and so on. And by the 13th century, with the Mongol invasion and the Rus, the Russians from the north, and so on, most of the million inhabitants of Khazaria were pretty much driven westward into Poland, primarily
Right. They
Poland,
went into Eastern Europe, only 1.5 million, and today worldwide they have about 13 million, I guess, something like that.
So what happened was in Poland, these...
Excuse me, Ted, just for our listeners, that 1.5 million was not comprised or composed of Semitic peoples from the Middle East. They were not biblical.
Primarily.
No. By and large, they were not biblical Jews in a historic sense or a DNA sense. They adopted Judaism in the year 603 by most accounts, something like that.
But on the other hand, historically, the Khazars were converted by the Jews, the huge Jewish population in Babylon, the Pharisees of Babylon and the academies of Babylon and so on, sent emissaries up to compete with Islam and with Christianity for the loyalty of the Khazar, of the Kagan of the Khazars. And also, during the years, let's say the 4th, 5th, 6th century and so on, many authentic Jews also emigrated out of Byzantium up to Khazaria, which was a completely persecution-free zone. And so there is a very good chance that Mesopotamian Semitic genes intermarried as Khazaria became a colony of the Babylonian exile, and also Byzantium, Jews from Byzantium and so on intermarried, that there could be a significant portion, although not a large portion. So That minority, a possible minority of Semitic genes in with the Khazarians could well explain why there do seem to be genetic traces of Semitic genes in the Polish Ashkenazim. But in Poland, the Khazars became fascinated with the Zohar or the Kabbalah, exalting it much, much higher than the Babylonian Talmud. And the Talmud was more accepted in the West by people like Maimonides, attempting to give a more rational basis to Judaism. But
Right.
The Zohar was very bold in saying that that the Jews were in a special position of semi-divinity. They were semi-gods who were intermediaries between the ultimate rarefied light, the En Sof of God at the very top of what are called the Sephirot of the Kabbalah, and the very bottom, which are the Gentiles and the demons. And so the Zohar taught that the Gentiles are demons. They're called the Cliffoth. They're called the Achim and Cliffoth and so on. They are meant to be ruled over by the Jews, exploited in every possible way. And in my articles at truthtellers.org, I give a number of quotations directly from the Zohar showing the very predatory, revolutionary encouragement which the Zohar gave to these Polish Jews.
Uh-huh.
In about the beginning of the 18th century, a Polish Jewish mystic by the name of Baal Shem Tov, a wonder worker, he was called a master of the name, a Jewish revolutionary, dreamed and established the vision mm-hmm. that the Kabbalah would energize world revolution. And mm-hmm. out of Baal Shem Tov emerged Hasidism, and also
okay,
world
hold it,
revolution.
Hold it right there. We have to take a break. Hasidism came from that, so we'll come right back and pick that up and elaborate on it just a little bit. We want to know who these Hasidics are. Stand by. Okay, welcome back. Talking to Ted Pike about the Hasidic, H-A-S-S-I-D-I-C, Jewish groups in this country and around the world. All right, so you're tracing their historical origin. Go ahead.
Yes. Baal Shem Tov established, number one, a community of Zohar worshippers in Poland. Very strong religious sect in Poland and, of course, radiated out in other Eastern European countries. And these are, of course, constitute what we call Ashkenazi or Eastern European Jews. Actually, they were primarily only Jewish proselytes, not accurate descendants of the tribe of Judah. And then number two, out of the mystical Zohar, which is full of revolutionary desire and intention to overthrow the nations, secret societies began to radiate out of Poland and in Germany. And we have people like Weishaupt and Cagliostro and Frank and Falk and a number of Jewish Kabbalistic subversives and wonder workers who began to actually go into the capitals of Europe, stimulating revolutions, stimulating the socialist movements, the overthrow of the Bourbons in 1789 in France, the revolutions of the 19th century, Revolution of 1829, Revolution of 1848, Paris Commune, and finally Bolshevism erupted, coming out of the socialist, Marxist, communist, Kabbalistic revolution that actually began in among the Hasidim in Poland. And you see, the whole mandate of the Zohar is that the Jew is a superior being. Could I just read several verses out of the Zohar here?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. That's a good
reference. This will give you some of the background, the motivational background, not only for the world revolutionary movement, but why to this moment, the Hasidim in New York City specialize in defrauding the government and the taxpayers. The Talmud itself in Ketubot 6b says, "You," meaning the Jews, "are thus called men, but the Goyim are not called men." And the Zohar says, "Living soul refers to Israel, who have living souls from above, and cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth to the other people who are not living soul." And the Zohar commanded that the Jews displace the Gentiles in power and rule over them. It says, "When God reveals himself, they will be wiped off the earth. Redemption will not be complete until Amalek, meaning the Gentiles, will be exterminated. And it says that when that is accomplished, man, meaning Israel, shall be unique in the world and ruler over all. And then one more quote, which I have had translated from the Mantuan edition of the Zohar in the original Aramaic and from the Library of Congress in Washington, confirming the accuracy of this translation. It says, Rabbi Jehuda said to him, Rabbi Chesgia, he is to be praised who is able to free himself from the enemies of Israel, and the just are much to be praised who get free from them and fight against them. Rabbi Chesgia asked, well, how must we fight against them? Rabbi Jehuda said, by wise counsel thou shalt war against them. By what kind of war? The kind of war that every son of man must war against his enemies, which Jacob used against Esau by deceit and trickery wherever possible. They must be fought against without ceasing until proper order be restored. Thus it is with satisfaction that I say we should free ourselves from them and rule over them. You see, these are the holiest of all scriptures. Moses doesn't hold a candle to this in the Old Testament. Even the Talmud is of lesser authority. For the Hasidic Jews of New York and Brooklyn, this is the most exalted moral guidance that can possibly be found in this life. And with this kind of a mandate to cheat and defraud and deceive the Gentiles, we can understand why that the Hasidim in New York are now notorious for crime and fraud and now even violence.
Well, they may be notorious, and notorious is their nickname, but they're certainly not making the mainstream or the minor stream media. They're obviously have friends in high places.
Oh, no. The New York media is very carefully protective of them. And I make quite a strong point, which we could probably talk about toward the end, of how Jews in high places consider the Hasidim really to be very precious, because they are a time capsule. They are a reflection of the authentic Kabbalistic Judaism out of which the entire New World Order is emerging. The Jewish media moguls in Hollywood, the international financiers.
Right.
All of them come out of the shtetls of Poland. These are their roots.
But aren't those roots more important to many of them than the alleged biblical roots?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The racial memory of the modern, even secularized Jew does not go back. Doesn't go back to Khazaria and not to the Old Testament and to Palestine.
Right.
It goes back to Poland. Poland in the 17th century.
Yeah,
or so.
This is important, and I'm glad you're bringing this up. People don't know this. That is truly, I guess, as close to roots as they're going to get. They're very important, those times and those people in that 1700 Poland. That, by the way, the new mayor of New York, oh my, unbelievable. Groveling in public to the Jewish state. And he's not even formally a Jew.
Yeah.
Just amazes me.
The truth is that everyone in New York in any kind of position, especially in a position of elected power,
right.
They
don't play ball. They don't get there. I understand that.
Absolutely. And as I'll probably mention again later, voting fraud is massive among the Hasidim. They're masters of the electoral process. They've studied it, and they find ways through birth certificate fraud and all kinds of things to double vote and even triple vote and travel to different parts of the state in order to vote again, in order to punish any politician who offends them or doesn't give them what they want, and to reward those that they want to exalt.
All right, very good. Hold on a second. We'll come right back. Very interesting overview of an area that does not get talked about on radio, but you hear it here. And we'll continue with Reverend Ted Pike in just a couple minutes. Okay, talking to Ted Pike about very interesting things. The texture of our society has some very dark nodes here and there, and one of them is being talked about tonight. Ted has a three-part series on the New York-based, I guess you could say, Hasidic Jewish community. What kind of crimes are they involved in, to your knowledge? What has your research uncovered? What do they do best?
Well, I'll give you just a little more history to help explain that.
Okay.
After the Second World War, many Hasidic Jews came from Europe to the United States. And, of course, earlier than that, around the turn of the century, there was a flood of Hasidic type of Jews that came into America back around 1890, in the turn of the century, establishing modest populations in New York City. But after World War II, they came out of Europe and came to America. And then in the 60s and 70s, there was a tremendous propaganda offensive saying the poor Jews in Russia are terribly persecuted by the communist regime, where in reality they weren't. The Jews founded communism, and there was some persecution, but the fact of the matter was that the Jews, and I have an entire chapter on this in my book, Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, the Jews gave the impression that there was terrible anti-Semitism in Russia, and they needed to get out. As a result, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews were allowed out of the Soviet Union in its most frigid pre-Glasnost period, when all the Gentiles had to stay behind the barbed wire. The Jews were, floods of Jews were let out in those decades, and ostensibly going to Israel, they managed to stop by in New York, and most of them stayed in New York. And considered political refugees, they were given lavish welfare benefits, food stamps, subsidized
by the
housing.
City and or the feds. I guess they got taken care of.
That's right. Well. And so these literally at least 200,000 or so Hasidic Jews were set up in New York as prime beneficiaries of welfare subsidies. And this, I have a supporter in New York who's a devout Christian, and he has supplied me with a great deal of observations about his Hasidic neighbors. He lives in Brooklyn. He's been a student of them literally for decades, watching them come and get off the airplanes and set themselves up in the 10-story subsidized apartments that the Jews are given there. He's seen them come out of those apartments and go in droves, living on welfare, yet getting on the buses and going on the droves to the gold and diamond and garment, Jewish garment industries there in New York, making hefty incomes which are largely unreported. And being subsidized, being entirely subsidized now by the taxpayers, even though they don't serve in the military, they're dual citizens with Israel, they have no desire, absolutely no desire, to become flag-waving Americans. They want to set up their own enclaves, protected.
Well, that's the template for all minority groups coming into this country.
Yes, but what happens is that these Jews are devout cableists. They as I say, all of them exalt the Kabbalah above the Talmud with these violently anti-Gentile sentiments. And in fact, he points out that he has lived there for decades with them, and they will not look him in the eye. They regard him. They will not return a salutation, a greeting, or anything like that. They truly do regard the goyim in which they surrounding them as subhuman and even demonic. But they study the Talmud and the Zohar, the men do, all day long, or they go off and they make other incomes.
Does it, I was going to say, does it pay well? Doesn't sound like it, but it doesn't at all.
The American taxpayers subsidize. What they do is that most of the men, or at least a majority of the men above 30, declare their homes to be a synagogue or a prayer room or a community center.
That's quite doable.
And that,
Yeah,
then they don't have to pay any taxes on it. And of course, they get Medicaid, they get food, and as a result, they can spend a good deal of their time producing huge families. The families average from between 6 to 10 and even up to 14. So they are multiplying literally like the rabbits of Australia. And every 20
they
years,
have, they have 10
double
and 12,
the population.
10 and 12 children.
Yeah, absolutely. Tremendous birth rate. And they clearly have an agenda of establishing these communities, the autonomous communities, in the major urban centers of America. And I point out that this is ominous because nothing like this really on this magnitude has happened before, in which to fulfill the command of the Zohar and the Talmud, they believe that they will someday rule as princes, as kings, over the goyim in the entire world. But the whole community, in fact, I talked to Nathaniel Kapner, a brother Nathaniel, the other night, and he lived for a year being taught by Hasidic rabbis before he became a Christian as a student. He lived with them for a year, and he says they're all on welfare. I said, would you say 90% of them are on welfare? He says they're all on welfare. They're all scamming the system in one way or another. And let me just, with this kind of motivation, you can see why they turn to lawlessness. Their most sacred scriptures encourage them in that direction. Here's a quote from a Jewish lawyer on the internet as he describes how the Hasidic, motivated by religious impulses, are scamming the rest of us. He says, as a prosecutor, and more recently, his name is Joel Cohen, and he says, as a prosecutor, and more recently, a white-collar defense attorney in New York, I have witnessed a disturbing rise in crime among Orthodox and Hasidic Jews. There is no shortage of high-profile Jewish crime. The most common charge is fraud against businessmen and run-of-the-mill citizens alike. Maybe I can continue this in a minute.
Please do. Yeah, hold on, Ted. We'll come right back. Well, learning new things, as we always do. And we'll do more of that with Ted in just a couple minutes. Okay, back with Ted. All right, Ted, go ahead. This is very interesting.
I'll just continue this quote from Joel Cohen, a prosecutor, Jewish prosecutor. His address on the internet is found in my three-part article at Truth Tellers. He says, as a prosecutor and more recently a white-collar defense attorney in New York, I have witnessed a disturbing rise in crime among Orthodox and Hasidic Jews. There is no shortage of high-profile Jewish crime. The most common charge is fraud against businessmen and run-of-the-mill citizens alike, most frequently involving victims outside of the Jewish community, against the government, against insurance carriers, against banking institutions, healthcare fraud, money laundering, and stock swindling. Perhaps most disturbing is a new breed of fraud involving observant community leaders, sometimes rabbis themselves, and intended to benefit the community itself, such as fraud against government spending programs for education and health care. And more often than not, the community, that's the Jewish community, including its lay and religious leaders, stands up for the perpetrators by defending or at least excusing their behavior. For example, following the conviction of four Hasidim in the New Square scandal, Hasidic leaders defended President Clinton's pardon of these individuals on the ground that the stolen millions were funneled back into their community rather than into their own pockets. There's a Jewish testimony from a Jewish prosecutor upholding what we're saying, that there is massive fraud, massive criminal activity going on, and the government is not coming down on it.
Doesn't sound the government is able to come down on it, even if it wanted to.
Not really. In the second part of my the second of my three articles, I actually detail go into detail with extensive internet citations, primarily from Jewish sources,
mm-hmm.
how that in a number of ways confirming what Cohen is saying, the Hasidic Jews are scamming, ripping off America, and being protected. For example,
what's he going to do about it?
Yeah.
Will he take them on? His own kind?
Not.
No.
Yeah. So I'll just read a paragraph here out of this second part. It says, constant reports in the New York press detail every conceivable grant of millions of dollars from state and federal governments for school buildings, Torah teaching assistance, and other financial aid. Hasidic leaders find ways to funnel government grants to hundreds of phony Hasidic charities and so-called educational fronts. For example, Brooklyn State Assemblyman Dove Hykend obtained a federal grant of $950,000 to educate against pedophilia among the Hasidim. But according to child advocate website failedmessiah.com, it was squandered, given to a little-known group of Hasidic rabbis, ostensibly opposed to pedophilia. Exactly such rabbis are most protective of pedophiles and prohibit Jews from reporting child abuse to mm-hmm. the authorities.
Yeah, and, I've heard whispers and rumors, unfortunately, that the child abuse and pedophilia are absolutely rampant among these kinds of people.
They are not only in New York, but in Jerusalem, in Australia.
Right. Right.
Yes, and I've written extensively.
I can't prove it. I just heard it, so I just want you to know that.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of the primary source of exposés on pedophilia in the Talmud. That goes, of course, back to the ancient sages of Israel, primarily Simeon ben Yohai, one of the very, very most highly esteemed of Talmudic rabbis among the Hasidim, who claimed that every Jewish male has the right to a child bride of 3 years and a day old. And so he called this halakha, or binding Jewish law. As a result, pedophilia is absolutely rampant among the Chabad and the Orthodox sector of Judaism today. And again, the Jewish big media completely obscures that from the public.
Sure. Well, I guess I'd do the same thing if I were them. I'm not. You pronounced it Chabad instead of Kabad. What is it?
Oh, maybe that's my error.
I've always heard of Chabad. That's okay. It doesn't matter.
Okay, I think you're probably right.
All right.
But I continue this article describing.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, considering the voter fraud and particularly the drug promotion among the Hasidic Jews, you see ecstasy, the drug ecstasy.
Well, they're
popular.
The ecstasy conduit, as I've read.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. right. The Orthodox Jews have always had a conduit from Amsterdam through the diamond trade, literally perhaps for centuries. They did the beer monopoly on diamonds and so on. And so they have been able and are still able to smuggle mm-hmm. Vast amounts of ecstasy manufactured as a synthetic drug in Israel
right.
To the United States,
right.
peddling that into colleges and universities on the East Coast.
There's a bottomless market for it. It goes on and
yes,
on.
And also money laundering. Massive documentation on the
internet. Sounds like a new mafia, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Billions, literally billions of dollars are money laundered every year in New York City.
So
and
what are
the Hasidim?
All right. What are
right in the middle of it?
What are centrist, mainstream, we could call them good, normal Jews supposed to do about this? Unless they rise up and insist that the Hasidim be held to the same yardstick that everyone else is, it doesn't seem like the support will ever be there to do anything. Mainstream Judaism has to stand up and reject this at some point, or it's not going to go away.
The only way this would be stopped is to expose the fact that the Babylonian Talmud and the Zohar, the Kabbalah, are the root of all of this corruption. And they will never do that. A number of these articles by Jewish sources and authorities that I quote in my three articles mildly chastise the Hasidim, saying this is inconsistent, this is a disgrace to
what,
the Torah.
Like tapping him on the wrist, so to speak?
But no one will come a mile away from suggesting that the very highest spiritual and legal authorities of Judaism itself, the Talmud and the Kabbalah, are the root, the authorization for this kind of illegal and criminal behavior. They won't do that. And therefore, you see, these Kabbalistic Jews, they are absolutely fanatically devoted servants of the Talmud and the Kabbalah. And they study it all day long. They live it and eat it and breathe it. It's supreme to them. And to have moralists on the outside lecturing themselves that this is a bad reflection on the God of Israel and so on, it doesn't mean a thing to them, because they have, as I say, this tremendous moral mandate to displace the Gentiles. And those rabbis who most successfully fleece the Gentiles and defraud the Gentiles out of millions are held up as heroes, as robber barons who are going out and in subverting and weakening the goyim. That is the great virtue for these people. They are very, very, have a very, very dangerous mentality that only can be addressed through exposure, wow, like we're doing here tonight, of the real reasons behind it.
Pretty amazing. Ted, thank you for being here. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Jeff.
You bet. Good night. Reverend Ted Pike, and there's a look at a part of this seamy society that we don't get to see very often. Grateful to Ted for that.